Welcome to Research Integrity Matters, the podcast where Gauri and Marino discuss research integrity and its importance to research quality with academic experts from a multidisciplinary perspective. Research Integrity Matters is co-initiated and sponsored by Netherlands Research Integrity Network, and all our episodes can be found on nrin.nl. My name is Marino, and this is the fourth episode of Research Integrity Matters.
So today we are really excited to have two guests on our podcast. We are joined this evening by Professors Mariette van der Hoeve and Julia Prees-Bouchet. We are honored to speak to them about training and education in research ethics and integrity, open science, and a brand new network for educators and trainers that have just recently been set up. Marietta is a professor of philosophy and ethics at Amsterdam University Medical Center and the Vrije Universiteit in Amsterdam. Her research focuses on education, on research ethics and research integrity, as well as on professional ethics and public health ethics. Julia is a professor at the education department in Kiel University, focusing on teaching and didactics, as well as open science and research integrity. So welcome, Marietta and Julia. So to kick off, I'd like to actually start by looking at education in academia, which is something I think all researchers, including our listeners, are either used to receiving or giving. You both have built your expertise trying to improve education in research integrity, ethics, and open science. Can you tell us a little bit more about the specific focus of your research?
Yeah, so I will start. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast. So in my academic career, higher education and methodologies were always my focus. So in the last few years, I concentrated more and more on research, how to teach and learn research integrity and open science. And I think this is actually a transdisciplinary endeavor we all have somehow to tackle. And yes, it is quite interesting and field which always gets me somehow thinking about how can we do it the best way.
Let me tell a bit about how I ended up in the field of research integrity education. And I also want to thank you for inviting me, because this is really exciting podcast series also. I have been an applied ethicist for quite some time, for decades now, and I've always been teaching in various disciplines, all sorts of professional ethics courses. At a certain point in time, integrity issues became more and more relevant. So we were already teaching about methodologies, but also about nature of certain types of research and how that leads to certain ethical debates. And almost naturally, I was also invited to do some teaching on research integrity and professional integrity. And this is really relevant to me, because it's always also about underlying values. And as we moved on in the debate on research integrity and code of conduct became more embedded in the institutes, people were also asking us to explain the code of conduct and make it more lively to people. So to me, that's one of the starting points, actually, to start teaching research integrity, but also to become more involved in the development and the design of these courses, because I think a lot can still be improved. And we have already learned a lot, but people are always reinventing the wheel. So I think I'm in a position to bring people together and learn more together on these topics. So that's one of my focus points, you could say, in being involved in this. And I also have very specific focal points in how to teach this, but this is also the case for Julia. I think we have a lot of overlap in the way that we approach these trainings.
Yes, thank you. So I actually want to say, I would like you to invite you to say a little bit about the two recent Horizon EU projects that you both were coordinating on research integrity. I understand that they were both addressing the same call that you both got granted, but two separate projects. So can you tell us a little bit more about what were some of the main takeaways from these two projects which recently ended, and how they are different from one another?
Well, maybe you can start with what the overlapping thing is, Julia.
Yes. So the overlapping thing is that we both, or both consortia, tried to find good ways in how to teach research integrity. I think both consortia, as far as I know, started with a student-centered approach, in a sense of, okay, we have to look at the learners, what do they need, which stage are they on, and when do they need what. So we started, both projects started from secondary school students, which was a new step to do, and covered bachelor students, master students, and PhD students. So maybe one bit from Path to Integrity, which was the project I coordinated, we concentrated on a dialogue. So from the beginning on, we said, okay, research integrity is a field in which the dialogue has a main place or position. So what we did is we developed the complete didactical framework around the dialogue principle. And I think, Mariette, as far as I know, you chose empowerment.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I think another common ground, which is already so much embedded in our work, is that we also took a very positive approach towards research integrity. So it's not about penalizing people who misbehave and preventing that. So raising our warning finger and say, beware that you do not plagiarize and thou shalt not. But that both our projects actually started with the idea that we need to foster positive research cultures. And indeed, the leading idea in the project Integrity that I coordinated was, if you are serious about fostering a positive research culture within the university, then you need to build capacities early onwards. You can start at high schools or secondary schools, as Julia said, and upwards. And you should not only start with PhDs. Actually, the main focus of many universities is still only on offering a PhD training. I think it should be a continuum, a learning pathway, the moment that you actually start at the universities, and also for senior researchers, because a lot of new topics and a lot of dynamics is ongoing in research practices that are relevant to more junior and more senior researchers. And we took the notion of empowerment to be leading there. So it's about learning to become more aware, learning to be able to reflect on the issues that you encounter. It's also learning about how to see them and ultimately also to take a more proactive attitude. And to me, there was this slogan of the three wise monkeys, which has become my motto, you could say, for the project. The three wise monkeys always say, they hear, they speak, and they keep silent. But in my case, empowerment is envisioned by hearing, seeing, and speaking up.
So you've mentioned that your project also aims to teach integrity at a fairly young age, so way before the PhD program, so to speak. Can you share with our listeners what the unique challenges are in teaching integrity at such a young age already?
Yeah, they are. Well, how did you do that, Julia?
Yeah, so what we discovered is, so it is difficult, of course, because the first thing what we discovered is there are no teachers who are doing this. So we had no champions where we could look at and say, okay, oh, this is a good way. So what we did is we tried to find overlaps with other school subjects. And this was quite difficult at the end. We do not know why, but geography teachers were quite open to the idea of teaching research. I do not understand it until now, but they were. So we collaborated with them. Then we always had to explain it to the teachers first, because we didn't want to teach integrity. That would be interesting too, but we wanted to teach research integrity. And the first thing always what they said to us is, oh yes, of course we do prepare the students to do research, or sometimes we even do research, but on a really primary level. So like that we just show them what that means. So research integrity is far too high. We do not need it. So this was the challenge we had. What we did is we connected it then to topics which were interesting and which really connected well to research integrity. And one of them is fake news. So we turned the topic around. I think research, or from my perspective, research integrity has two sides of one coin. So the one is for all the people who want to be researchers or are researchers, so they have to do responsible conduct of research. But on the other side of the coin, we have the consumer of research, like a citizen. Yeah. So from a citizen perspective, we say, okay, what we want is reliable research results. And this was the angle we went into high schools, and that worked really well. So the students, the high school students liked the courses, and also the teachers were quite open to adapt these courses into their fields. And then we could even broaden our teacher pool away a bit from geography to social, I don't know the words in English, it's social politics or even other subjects, yeah.
Cool. Mariette?
Yeah, we took a bit of a different approach. So we had a survey-based design of educational tools, and we tried to figure out what kind of knowledge high school students, but also bachelor students, undergrads already have, and what needs they possibly have. And then we identified topics that you also, if you're not yet involved in conducting some real research yourself, are highly relevant. And that overlaps with notions of academic integrity, for example. So the discussion on free riding, if you do some group work, that already plays a role at primary school, as also at secondary school. And we always have people free riding the group work because they're not doing their fair share. And how do you deal with that? So that was a typical type of topic that we addressed, and that we, for the high school students, we developed some course materials that would address this question in several different perspectives. We also had one on plagiarism, for example. What is plagiarism? Just to get them more acquainted with the whole idea. And then we would compare, well, ChatGPT is now very popular to talk about, but we had Alexei as an example. And then the question was, if you would use Alexei to do your homework, would it be different than asking your friends or asking your parents or just use Google? And try to discuss with the students if there are differences, and if there are not, well, why they would think it would be acceptable or not acceptable to use any of these sources. So to make them more aware, that was our main target, actually. But we try to scaffold all the and tailor all the materials to the experience they already have. At the different levels, and then it becomes much more relevant if you also start doing some research at a later stage, because you recognize, oh, the free riding, well, if you offer someone a guest authorship, that's pretty much free riding, isn't it? So the overlap is easily found.
And do you find that students at this age are more susceptible to learn about research integrity than at a later stage?
It's not about being more susceptible. I think it's about making it relevant to them. They already are encountering these issues in daily life, and they also have problems to speak up if someone is free riding their group, or if they see someone copying and pasting complete texts from the web into their assignments. And if you don't talk about it with them at an early stage, they might not be fully aware of what's wrong with that, or what's problematic sometimes about this, if you ask them in the later stage. So I've done some surveys also with master students, and they would always say, well, it doesn't matter that I cheated a lot during high school because it wasn't really relevant. Or even during my bachelor's, I would do it a bit. But now I've really chosen my own master program. Now it's becoming really relevant. Well, what's the difference? But there's more at stake for them, of course, I understand.
Yeah, you touched, I think both of you already touched a little bit on terminology, because you already used now responsible conduct of research. We have research integrity. Well, we haven't started discussing about open science, but there's research ethics in the introduction, and academic integrity, Marietta, you just mentioned as well. So there are many terms that are being used in the field. And I think one of our goals with the podcast is also to reach a broader audience outside of the audience that's usually doing research and encountering these issues. So my question really is to ask you if you can explain to our listeners on how to navigate the use of these different terms, academic integrity, scientific integrity, research integrity. How are they the same sides? Are they different sides of the same coin?
I would say not. So they're not all different sides of the same coin, but sometimes it matters. It depends a bit on the context in which you use these concepts, is my opinion. And a lot of people find it really important to distinguish research integrity from scientific integrity, from academic integrity. But from a point of view of education, it doesn't always make sense to me, because there are only a limited number of trainings on offer. And within these trainings, you have a very limited amount of time, and you want to address topics that overlap continuously. So if we teach PhD students on research integrity, of course, we are going to discuss open science movements and the values underlying to the whole open science movement. Or we're talking about replication and reproducibility and its networks. While for some reasons, for example, if you want to apply for a certain grant, then it might matter in which category you put yourself in. But to me, if you look at the content of, for example, academic integrity and research integrity, there is so much overlap, really. So it doesn't always make sense to want to distinguish it, especially if you're in a training context.
Julia, would you agree?
Yes, I agree. So I think there are different groups and they use different terms. These terms overlap, but of course, in their contexts, they have different meanings. So in the projects we were in from this educational perspective, I think the main point from Path Integrity was at the end, we want reliable research results for the research community and also for society. And that makes it quite easy in a sense of, okay, whatever term brings us there, we are going to use, yeah. If it is research integrity, if it's research ethics. But when you look closely and when you think then, okay, which method am I going to use in the classroom and what do I want to achieve in particular, then I think all the trainers should have knowledge on these different terms, because it is quite difficult to teach, for example, an ethical dilemma when you just talk to your students, yeah, and like in a way of explaining. So the typical thing there is to use so-called use cases, yeah, or study cases, and let them discuss and to weigh the different things, yeah. When you concentrate on an integrity issue, where the right thing is, it is known what how and what to do, but somebody doesn't want to do it because something else gives him or her incentives to do it, then please don't use these cases and let them weigh, because then you will have a negative effect, actually. So from a didactical perspective, I would say if you go the long run, then reliable results or research integrity as an umbrella term is totally okay. But if you go on into particular things and how, in a sense, when you think about, okay, what do I want to teach and how am I going to teach it, then it is important to look in detail. What does it mean? academic integrity? What does it mean, research integrity? What do I want to achieve?
Okay, so I'm quite excited to actually talk to you about a recent network that the two of you have put together and which had its first inaugural meeting in Brussels in the beginning of March this year. And that is the Network of Education and Research Quality, or NERC. Could you tell us a bit more about the goals and visions of NERC?
NERC is a bit of a silly name, but NERC explicitly stands for research quality. And by not choosing research integrity education as a focal perspective, but research quality, we explicitly broaden the scope. So this is a network which is there for people working both in reproducibility networks, in the field of responsible research innovation, research integrity, research ethics, open science. We all invite them to participate, and I think we've succeeded quite well so far in bringing these people together. And there are three very simple aims for this network. We've seen the need, and given the fact that more than 155 people have subscribed to this meeting in Brussels, it is underscored. We think that there is this need. We see a need for people to exchange their experiences and their good practices and also their failures. So sometimes our teachings don't go as well as we would like, or we don't get enough time to do all the things that we would like to do. So the exchange function, a network is meant to do that. That's the first aim. The second aim is that we want to improve the quality of these trainings. So everyone is reinventing the wheel, starting all over again. And anyone who is interested in the topic can become a teacher in it. Well, we think that we can improve both training and trainer qualities, and that NERC can actually facilitate in that. And the third aim of the network is also to do it all much more in an evidence-based manner. So there is a lot of literature already available, mainly from courses and trainings in the United States, where they have been developed and embedded these trainings much longer than in Europe or in other continents, because we are slowly moving towards a situation where these types of courses are becoming more obligatory. But this needs to be also evidence-based. We're not looking for courses that only evaluate participant satisfaction. But we really want to know, are we making any progress? And then the question is, which type of progress are we changing? Do we want to change the behaviors of future researchers? Do we want to show find a change in research culture? Do we want to lower the numbers of misconduct that are reported? Well, these are all aims that you could set, but you cannot simply ask a participant, did you like the course and do you have a meaningful takeaway message? I think we're past that stage. It's much more at stake also in Europe to have high standards in research, and that's what NERC is also contributing to.
And is one of the goals of NERC to also be global? I mean, it's obviously being initiated by two professors based in Europe. The meeting was held in Brussels. Is there plans to actually reach out also to other research integrity networks that have recently been set up in Africa and in the Asia Pacific? And how will you do this?
Julia.
Yeah, so yes, we did reach out. As you said, so we are positioned in Europe, and everything started here in Europe with all the partners from the two or even three Horizon projects. But yes, so we are already in contact with internationally, actually. And I think it makes sense. Research integrity or research quality is not a thing you can do in your national or European boundaries. Collaborations in research go across the world. So we also need to combine our forces when we think about education and research quality.
We already did this. So we wrote a position paper and we included the expert in the United States, Mike Kaligman. We had people from the African continent joining us online in Brussels. We are going to present next week in the Asian Research Integrity Conference, the network also. So we're reaching out And I think, well, we shouldn't make any distinctions between European or non-European. It's everyone can learn from each other, and we can also learn from people who are still fully developing their trainings and training materials.
So clearly, the geographical diversity is there. Of course, we as research integrity researchers know that, for example, biomedical and life sciences have been traditionally leading in research integrity, research quality, education, and training. Would you agree? I see you laughing, so I'm very curious what the answer will be. And do you also observe this within NERC so far?
So maybe I start with the short story. So when I got the grant for a Path to Integrity, I met with a representative from the European Commission just to talk how to start and what to do. And his first sentence was, "Oh, you are not from the medical field?" And I was quite surprised. I was like, "No, I'm not. Why should I be?" So, and now 5 years later, I understand his sentence. Yes. So, as you say, the medical field is a front runner here. I think, and in NERC, there are a lot of persons from the medical field. And I think this is okay because they did a lot of research already and we can learn from them. But also, on the other hand, we are mixing it up now. And this also makes sense. And yes, we are gathering more and more people. I am one of them. and I'm bringing others with me. And we also have people from even from law and the humanities now and engineering. So yes, we are widening the field with NERC.
Yeah, and there's a great need too. So I actually originate from the humanities. I now work in a medical organization, but I'm really feeling like a person from the humanities. And also within the humanities, you now see these discussions starting up, I would say. And particularly with regards to all the available tools, this has been a real problem. We have some wonderful movies like The Lab, Integrity Factor, On Being a Scientist, a very nice movie to watch, but they all focus on lab work and on the life sciences and on the typical issues that you encounter there. And it's not always easy for someone from the humanities or law to identify yourself with the issues that are at hand there. And that doesn't mean immediately that within your own departments or disciplines, like in humanities, you will never encounter any of these issues. And that's a mistaken belief. And I think there are some wonderful examples already in the literature now. For example, on replication studies in the humanities, it's really annoying, this article, actually. But it's also provocative to have discussions within other disciplines as well. And actually, within the trainings that we offer to PhD students online during the pandemic, I've seen many different PhD students participating in these courses that would come from a big variety of disciplines. So the need is now, I think, almost everywhere.
So do you find it easy to reach out? I mean, you are from the humanities originally, so that might help. But given that it's less embedded, maybe I'm exaggerating, but less embedded in those disciplines, is it also easy or is it less easy to reach out to them? Or do you find that you can get them on board quite easily, actually?
Yeah, the last I would say. So it also helps, of course, that in the Netherlands, but also Europe-wide, the quality standards have increased. So every university is expected to embrace the code of conduct and also what it means to have embraced this code of conduct. So in the Netherlands, you have this duty of care very explicitly, and universities have all said we will offer trainings to all our PhD students, at least, and now the discussion is whether supervisors should also be trained and whether at undergrad levels it also should be offered a training. And there is no distinction between the types of disciplines, so it's there for every faculty. And, well, at the Free University, you see this very clearly. All the faculties have this mandatory program now.
So, Marietta, speaking about institutional responsibilities, I'm curious to hear from you and also Julia. What do you think institutions can do more of besides the one-off or twice-off research integrity, research ethics, open science education, which is currently being offered in many Dutch universities. I don't know how it is, Julia, in your institution, but we talked earlier about the challenges of education and that it should not only start earlier, but it should also be more repetitive, not in necessarily in content, but that it occurs more often in a student's curriculum, a researcher's curriculum, not just only as a PhD. So what can institutions do better when it comes to research integrity, research ethics, responsible conduct of research education?
Of course, training is one of the main points, as you can see in the European Code of Conduct and in almost all national conducts on research integrity. They also put a lot of emphasis on training, and I think that makes sense. Training alone will never make bring us to the goal or to the aim we try to achieve. So I think institutions can do a lot on many different levels. And it's so different that the stages of development, I call them now, they're so different. They're different from country to country and the institutions in the country, but also inside one country. Yeah, if you look from one institution to another, they treat the topic research quality or research integrity really differently. So I make an example. If you look at the University of Applied Sciences in Germany, there, I think, you really have to look closely to find anything the institutions do for this topic. Yeah? And that it's not because they do not want to, it's because it was not their field. They just, for example, some of them have now the rights to give PhDs out, to have PhD students. Yeah? So it's the first time they are confronted with the topic. Yeah. And I think so. There are a lot of different things, policy, in a sense of making policies, making codes, making conducts, giving the possibility to have a person to speak to when you have questions, do informal training in a sense of a campaign material so that everybody knows what we're talking about. If you look at in the field of open science, it's a lot about awareness raising because they do not know what actually is possible, which tools are in place. Infrastructure. So there's a complete roundabout you can do. And I think a lot of institutions do. Yeah. It's not that they're not doing it, but it's a process which is quite slow. And I think we have to exchange our experiences between institutions so that we know, okay, what works, yeah, under which condition.
Yeah, and I think also that maybe the attitude, if you can call it like that, of institutions also needs to change. So the wonderful project SUBS4RI has clearly shown that if you really want to embed in the veins, as you would say in Dutch, of the organization, what the relevance of research integrity, then we need to acknowledge that it's not just bringing an infrastructure in the organization and ticking the box of offering a training, but that we have to realize that research integrity and also the dynamics of research integrity issues should be considered as a learning pathway in the lifelong learning of and assessment of researchers throughout their career. So senior researchers also need to adapt their knowledge and their skills to, for example, learn how to do be more open science oriented, for example, but also to pay more attention to being more transparent towards their colleagues in all the issues that they encounter that could be identified as relevant in the gray area of the research practice. So I think it's also about taking this compliance perspective, which is okay as a starter, into changing it into something that we acknowledge as this is just part and parcel of what it is to be good researchers.
I was thinking exactly that because I've had research ethics training during my research training as a research master's student, and we had 2 days of training, and then I was like, and now I'm an ethical researcher, like this is how it works or something. My lucky quote unquote situation was I started my research training the year at the school where Diederik Stapel was, the year after they caught him. So research integrity was a massive theme within the school. And then everybody was talking about it all the time. So you get a culture where this is very normal to talk about instead of like, here's 2 days of training, read these papers, do good things in your research life. And now, and good luck, and go to research. Like we were talking about this like every single day. And then it really gets embedded in your daily practice.
Exactly. And you don't no longer hesitate to discuss it with other people. So this is one of the assignments that that we offer in our trainings, and I think Julia does a bit similar things, is just to say to a PhD student, okay, now you make an appointment with your supervisor, and you're going to talk about integrity issues that you think you might encounter during your project. That's really scary to do. But all the participants would return and would feel relieved and say, oh gosh, my supervisor is actually a human being himself or herself, and they want to talk about these things. And usually they don't take the time. It's just about the project and about doing your research well, but it's not about, oh, might we run into a conflict of interest here because, or shall we talk about co-authorship before we actually start writing a manuscript? And just opening up is so relevant, and we should make that more the default in our own practices, I would say.
To our young research listeners, talking about co-authorships before the start of the project is a very smart thing to do. Highly recommend it.
And do it iterative. So if the situation changes, don't hesitate to discuss it again. Nothing is set in stone here.
Gauri? Last takeaways.
Maybe? Yeah, well, I mean, I could go on. As you know, I have a long list of questions, and I can carry on speaking. But maybe I'll leave the last word, actually, to our guests, and say to them, if there is one thing, if you had a magic wand and you could change something on research integrity and research ethics and research quality, training on research quality, what would that one thing be? Julia?
Oh, these are wonderful questions.
Only one thing. You can only choose one thing.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to give two answers, because the thing is, I would wish that everything, that I would not have to do this trainings, or that I would, that should not be actually my field of expertise, because we could all do responsible research and train the people from the beginning, so that we do not would have to do this now in this network. That would be the perfect wish, but I don't think that this will work out. And actually in the field, I wish that we look more, or that we try to get more evidence on what works and what doesn't. When we look closely, we see that we do not have a lot of evidence. There are some studies, but there's no clear picture. So that is my wish, that we concentrate on that.
Yeah, if there's one thing that I could change, is then I would certainly change the high pressure that many people feel in the academy to continuously come up with very good and productive results, but that we can take some time. So a bit more an appeal to slow science, I would say, to give yourself a bit more leeway, to accept that we have a lot of uncertainties, and then simply enjoy conducting research a bit more.
I love that. Perfect finish to our conversation. Thank you for joining us today to talk about teaching research integrity and research quality, and promoting your initiative on the network of education and research quality. I will post a link to the position paper in the show notes, so our readers can find the position paper and read further on what you're doing and what you aim to do in the future. This was Research Integrity Matters with Mariette van den Hoven and Julia Pries-Boegheid, co-hosted by Gauri and Marino and produced by Maarten van Voerkom. We thank Netherlands Research Integrity Network for co-initiating and sponsoring this podcast series. You can follow Research Integrity Matters in your favorite podcast app like Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcast. And with respect to the latter, we'd like to ask you to leave a review. That will help others to discover this podcast as well. We would love to answer your questions, so if you have questions for us or our future guests, then you can find our email or Twitter accounts in the show notes as well. That's it for this time. Thanks for listening, and until the next episode.